Ayo, we came to rock the venue. Then to swallow several shots. So Jaeger followed by 20. Hi guys, hope you're well. Welcome to episode 19 of the Maps Podcast. As always, my name is Rick Moylan. I am your delightful host. Some might not agree with that bit, but there we go. It's great to talk to you all. I hope you're all well. I hope you're having a fantastic week. The sun is shining in Manchester. Don't know about where you are. And when it shines here, which is not very often, we make the most of it. Anyway, episode 19, and it gives me absolute pleasure to introduce a fantastic guest today. I'm really, really delighted he's agreed to talk to us. Pull your chair up, as always. Get your pen and paper out because you're gonna get some major tips, advice that is going to be fundamental to you. And it's lovely to talk to Dr. Scott Robinson. How are you, Scott?
Hi, Rick. Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. And it's also sunny here in Birmingham for a change, so which always makes the day a little bit better. But yeah, thanks very much for having me. It's great to be on board.
Sunny in Birmingham. We have this long-standing joke. You see, that whenever I drive down south, that the minute we get to about Junction 17, coming north on the motorway, it starts to rain again. So, so we're both winning today. Yeah, it's sunny here. It's sunny where you are. Yeah,
yeah, it's sunny here. And do you know what? Exactly the same happens to me because my family are all based up north, and it is pretty much that exact same point where, you know, if I'm taking someone new up there, or a friend or a colleague or something, and the rain just hits at that certain point, and I think, oh yeah, we're up north now.
Okay, cool. Where are your family from?
They're all from Chester. Yeah, so I was born and raised in Chester. Studied at John Moores for 4 years, and then moved down to Birmingham for the PhD. So spent 4 years doing the PhD, and then decided to stay down here, really. So quite nice and settled, which works well because it's quite central. So, you know, to get up north, to get down south, it's only a couple of hours each way. So,
Cool. I mean, I think that's probably a great place to start. We'll get onto your website and all that kind of stuff later. But, PhD, you hold the proud title of doctor before your name.
Yeah, I forget that.
Everybody, it's funny, whenever I talk to, you know, or most doctors anyway, they get a bit sort of embarrassed about it or whatnot, but it's an amazing achievement. I've got a little bit of an academic background myself. I know how hard you've worked for that. Tell us a bit, please, about you, about what you do and whatnot like that.
Yeah, sure. I am currently a consultant performance nutritionist and physiologist. So I set up my own business around about two years ago now, kind of flying solo on things. Prior to that, I worked for a company called Guru Performance. They were based down in central London in Mayfair, and they had a lab down there. So I got some really good experience working for them with a range of different kind of clients, from your kind of corporate bankers right through to your elite level athletes. And then whilst I was working for them, I was completing the PhD at Birmingham University. And there it was specializing in exercise metabolism. So specifically kind of looking at fuel selection during exercise. So carbohydrate and fat use during exercise, how that can influence performance and also metabolic health. So that was a cool 4 years spent studying there. And prior to that, I did a bachelor's in sports science from John Moores University, and then also did a master's there for a year too. So got some kind of good intern experience while I was at John Moores, working at Everton Football Club for a couple of years. So that's it in a nutshell, really.
Well, in a nutshell. So bloody hell. Tell us then a little bit more, if you don't mind, about, because I want to unpick that a little bit, because you've just been like a bit like, I've done a sports science degree. Oh, and I've done a master's. Oh, and I've done a PhD, you know, and, you know, obviously we know each other a little bit, and I know the kind of character you are, you know, very humble and whatnot like that. But that's some pretty
cool achievements, right? And
yeah.
Glory Performance, we've heard of them. So I've heard of them. They're mega. What obviously there's a passion there. There's a passion for sport and for performance and nutrition. Tell us a bit more about that, please.
Yeah, sure. So firstly, I'll probably just say that I've been told by my family that I'm not allowed to graduate again because they've said no more graduations. We've gone to enough. but the passion, I guess it kind of grew organically, really. I've always had an interest in sport when I was younger. Played the typical kind of sports like football, tennis, did a bit of running as well, a bit of athletics. Then just enjoyed the kind of biology, physiology side of things at A level, progressed on to do sports science. And obviously you have your different disciplines in sports science. And I guess I kind of whittled it down to nutrition as I went along, really, and just went with what I enjoyed. So never really thought too much about the career side of things. I always followed what I was kind of most passionate about and had the most interest in. And during the Masters, actually, I was really lucky to be supervised by Professor Don McLaren at John Moores University. And he was a nutritionist at Everton for a good amount of time, I think about 10 to 12 years.
Yep.
And he, you know, was quite an inspirational figure for me. And I saw what he did at Everton because I interned, alongside him or underneath him, should I say. And then thought, yeah, this is something that I think I'd be interested in. Enjoyed it a lot during the Masters. The Masters was physiology based predominantly, but then I did a dissertation and a kind of research project in nutrition. Enjoyed that. And then I thought, you know, how do I stand out from the crowd? It's a very saturated market, sports science in general, let alone nutrition.
Yeah.
I thought the natural progression then would be good to go on to do a PhD. And I was really lucky to get a great PhD at Birmingham, which was something that a topic that I was really interested in. And then, when I was at Birmingham, I worked at Aston Villa for two seasons, as well as with Guru Performance. So I was kind of getting that research academic side of, my CV growing, but also was conscious that I wanted to ultimately be an applied practitioner. So tried to get as much experience there too. And then it just kind of grew organically. I never really had a plan of action, so to speak. I knew roughly what I'd like to do. Just let it evolve and feel really, fortunate to be where I am now and working with the athletes that I'm working with, to be honest.
Okay. And just remind us, what did you write your PhD in?
So it was, the area was exercise metabolism.
Yeah.
And specifically, I looked into fat oxidation, so fat burning during exercise.
Yep.
So we looked at, how well individuals and athletes burn fat during exercise and how well does that translate to performance and also metabolic health. So we looked at whether, for example, if an individual is a high fat burner during exercise, are they also a high fat burner over 24 hours? So we actually put people on a treadmill, measured how well they burn fat during exercise, and then later put them in a metabolic chamber for 36 hours, actually.
Wow.
And just measured the associations there. So it was really cool research, actually. We managed to publish it in some pretty good journals, which I was pleased about. That's it in a nutshell, really.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to have a field day with that in a bit. We'll come back to that because I'm going to absolutely ask you for some opinions on some fat loss methodology that's kicking around and maybe drop a few supposed gurus' names in there. And I'll see how far I can get with you on that one. But I mean, that's cool. That's really, really cool. And I'm also going to mention your publications a little bit as well. I'd like to learn a little bit more about them and so forth. But we'll come back to that if that's okay. You then, touched on, I've gone solo. You've done some cool work with Everton, Villa and all that. And it looks like it's going well. Tell us a little bit about what the day job, so to speak, is now.
Oh, I don't think 2 days ever look the same, to be honest. With the consultancy, like I said, set it up about 2 years ago. It was quite a bold move for me to jump from, because Guru Performance was part-time during the PhD and then I moved full-time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got to give credit to my, I guess my boss, but also my mentor, Laurent Bannock. He helped me out immensely with developing myself as kind of a practitioner, and kind of gave me that confidence to go and stand on my own two feet and develop my own consultancy.
Yeah.
So yes, yeah, so I went and set up the consultancy. Actually started working with Lawrence Accoli, the professional cruiserweight boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my foot through the door in boxing. And then, yeah, did a reasonable job with him, I guess. And he got chatting to Cal Yafai, up in Sheffield, who's the super flyweight world champion.
Yeah.
Cal's also Birmingham based, so it worked quite well. I met up with Cal, started working with Cal. And then, yeah, started to pick up the other boxers too. So Joe Gallagher up in Manchester got word of what I was doing with Cal and with Lawrence, brought me on board with Callum Smith, and then started working with a few of his fighters as well now. So you've got Anthony Crawler and Callum Johnson, who are brilliant to work with.
Yeah.
Done some work with Paul Butler as well. And then obviously got the magical phone call from you, Rick. Asking
that was asking a dark day, I bet. That was
asking it. Funny enough, ironically, I was actually in Sainsbury's car park, sitting in the car when you called, and yeah, asking me to be on board with Team Quig, which, you know, was absolutely fantastic. So yeah, so kind of got my foot through the door with the boxing,
yeah.
And obviously kind of work with the guys in terms of their physiological testing, which is something we can kind of dip into if you want.
Mm-hmm.
A bit later on, and then also the nutrition and fueling for performance and making weight side of things, and then yeah, on the kind of side of that, I work with a few Premier League footballers one-to-one, which is really cool, and then also in professional motorsport as well. I look after a couple of drivers there.
Sorry, I thought I'd cut you off then, Scott. Are you there still?
Yeah, still here.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had a panic then for a second. I mean, yeah, Callum Smith, he's quite good, isn't he? <You know? laughs> Yeah. Andy Crawler, he's quite good as well, you know. And I don't know Paul Butler personally, but I believe he's won a world title as well, I believe, at one stage. Yeah. And Callum Johnson, I do know a little bit, and he's a real tough fighter, good fighter, Commonwealth champion, British champion, I believe.
Yeah.
World title, sort of getting close to world title challenge, maybe, you know.
Yeah. He's hoping that his next fight will be a world title shot.
Yeah, and Accoli, I mean, Yafai, you've mentioned, world champion,
yeah.
And Accoli's making some noise, isn't he?
He's doing really well actually, which is good to see, because he's got a really solid team around him who put a lot of effort in. Lawrence himself is a great athlete, great professional, puts a lot into his nutrition, into his training. Got a brilliant coach in Barry Robinson, who's relatively new to the team, who's kind of stepped things up a level for him.
Yeah.
And I think that's showing it's paying its dividends in the ring. He's, you know, last two fights, pretty much, I mean, I think he's 12 fights, 12 wins, 9 knockouts. But the last two knockouts have been pretty emphatic, really, last 2-3. So, yeah, he's doing well for himself.
Yeah, I mean, the stats don't lie, do they? You know, and he's a handful, there's no doubt about that. And I think he's going to get better and better and better. And I mean... obviously, I'm a big boxing fan. If I was going to be completely selfish, I would just love to just keep you here all day, just asking about, you know, the boxers. And I'm sure there's only, you know, there's so much you can say and can't say. But quite a big fight coming up for Anthony Crawler quite soon.
It is, yeah. Yeah. You could say that.
You're travelling, yeah?
Yeah, they're travelling. So leave on a week today, actually. So we'll probably be up in the air flying to LA. So, yeah, we're leaving a good... Would it be 9-10 days to prep? So Crawler's taking over his chef Wayne as well, who's been absolutely brilliant this camp, who I think you know quite well.
I do.
Wayne
Ambrose Meals. Wham in Manchester.
So yeah, me and Wayne have been working closely this camp. Crawler's training really well. He's had some great sparring partners. Joe's done well to bring in some top guys there. So we're all kind of doing our research on our own respective areas, so to speak, to give us every possible chance, because we all know that Loma's not necessarily a walkover, shall we say.
Yeah, he's quite good as well, isn't he?
He's all right, yeah.
He's all right. He's not bad. I mean, you know, what a story, Anthony Qualla. You know, he's sort of kind of, I think, you know, people say, oh, he's the nicest guy in boxing and all this kind of stuff. But he actually is. And he deserves everything he gets, you know. And this is boxing, right? You know, so anything can happen. I'm sure, you know, knowing him as I know him a little bit, and you've obviously been working with him very closely on the inside, he'll leave no stone unturned, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, you're fighting someone against, like Lomachenko, you have to gain every possible advantage you can during camp to give yourself every possible chance of success. And Crawler's got a brilliant team around him, got a great trainer, obviously, in Joe, got Wayne, who's helping out, doing brilliant meals, Johnny Reynolds, known also as Johnny Velocity, doing the S&C work.
That's a cool name.
It is cool. And it's funny, actually, because when people or when someone calls him Johnny Reynolds, nobody has a clue who they're talking about. They're like, Johnny Velocity. I think it's the same with his brother as well. Crawler's, I mean, Crawler's great. I mean, you always think, you know, these guys just nice in front of camera because they have to be, they have to, you know, get the fans on side. But actually, you know, and actually with all the guys, you know, that's why I like working in boxing so much is, you know, they've often come from humble beginnings, and they are just an absolute pleasure to work with. And, you know, I genuinely think if I all of a sudden won the lottery or something like that, you know, I'd still continue working in boxing and doing what I do, because it's great to, I feel like I can have a really good impact with the knowledge that I have and help them make weight safely and actually improve their lives, so to speak, during the camp and make it easier for them. But also, I know the dangers that they can put themselves through sometimes to make the weight. So if I can help in any way with that, then that's a, you know, that's a real nice positive for me, I suppose. So yeah, I mean, with Crawler, he's just been brilliant, really welcoming into the team. Wayne's been great to work with, and yeah, it's all going well. So, and like you said, no, you never know what can happen in boxing. Get clipped once, that could be it.
Yeah.
So we just got to give ourselves every possible chance of success.
Okay. I want to go on to that in a second, but just very, very briefly, in terms of, you mentioned making, you know, your title on your website, and it's, you know, a really impressive website. It's performance nutrition. So in terms of your sort of core philosophies, is it all about safety and giving the person, the client, the athlete, the best chance of performance? Is that
fair? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the two go hand in hand, really. So I don't think we ever really need to compromise safety. We can always make the weight right and as best as possible, provided there's enough time. And usually I'd say enough time is a bare minimum of a 6 week camp.
Yep.
Ideally, at the level that these guys are fighting at, it would be a 10 to 12 week camp. But some of the guys, will start 16 weeks out. And I think that it's so important to be able to structure the camp appropriately and set the right targets and manage expectations. And that, you know, in terms of making the weight, we need to make sure that we not only make the weight, but we make the weight right, and that we optimize performance in every single training session in the process.
Yeah.
I think there's a big difference between, you know, eating healthily and eating for performance. And maybe that's something that we can get into in a little bit of detail a bit later on. But that's really what I try and focus on with what I do, is gaining every possible advantage that we can and making sure, like you said, that there's no stone unturned. And sometimes I think when I've started working with the boxers or whoever it may be, they see nutrition as just eating healthily.
Yep.
But actually they don't realize all the other things and all the other bits of detail that we can go into that will benefit their performance, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Just out of interest, very just purely from myself. It's like, you know, you said you love work. Every day is a Saturday. You know, you wouldn't give it up if you won the lottery.
Most days,
I'm sure. We all have the odd day, don't we? We all have the odd day. But how old were you when you got your PhD?
Oh, good question. 26, 27 maybe.
That's mega.
Yeah.
So that is mega.
Pretty much went straight through. I took a gap year after A-levels and went to the States, did some coaching and a bit of travelling. And then just went straight into it.
Hence,
I've got a few grey hairs on my head now.
let's not talk about hair, mate.
Leave
that alone. No need for that.
But low blow.
The reason I ask you is because, you know, people will sometimes look at you in these positions and the people that you're working with and so forth and say, oh, he's lucky. And there's nothing lucky about over 10 years of non-stop study and the sacrifices and the financial sacrifices and you know, part-time jobs while you're doing it. And I'm sure there was many late nights and early mornings, and we're certainly not asking for sympathy, but equally we get a lot of young trainers listening and young coaches listening to this podcast, you know, so I just wanted to include that core message in there for them that, you know, to it's great most of the time, but make no mistake about it, it's not lucky, you know.
Yeah, I think, I completely agree with you there. And, you know, when I look back, it wasn't, particularly during the PhD, it wasn't easy at all. There were ups, there were downs. It was a real bumpy road. But I think for any young practitioners or aspiring practitioners listening in, I'd just say, you know, you have to think, you know, what are you passionate about? What will you enjoy doing? Because first and foremost, that's the most important thing. And you've just got to persevere. Because for me, it might sound like it's been a, you know, super positive road the whole time, but it's not. I've had my kind of, bad experiences, you know, and negative experiences, so to speak, but you just got to overcome them.
Sure.
And the perseverance is key. And also, I do feel lucky with the gigs, but I also believe that you're a creator of your own good luck. And if you work hard and you persevere and you're kind to people and you treat people right, then, you know, you'll go a long way. If not immediately, it will happen at some point.
Mm, I agree. I totally agree. I also loved what you said about managing the client's expectations there. I think that was a key message in there. Amazing. Going back to and then moving on from crawler and giving yourself the best chance and getting the right team and the right things, you run quite a comprehensive testing program with your guys. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so the testing is something that, so all the tests that I do pretty much with the boxers, I also do with the footballers, with the motorsport guys as well, and then also with some private clients that I look after, like businessmen, for example, businessmen and women.
Yeah.
And, so they are all tests that pretty much that I did during the PhD. So I learned all about them during that time and also during the masters. So the kind of core tests are, we'll do a resting metabolic rate, which essentially looks at how many calories the body burns over a day if the athlete was to stay at complete rest. So all the athlete needs to do is lie still on a bed, a face mask goes on them, and you measure the amount of carbon dioxide produced and oxygen consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a super, super interesting test to do, actually, because you can either estimate resting metabolic rate or you can measure it. And if you measure it, it's far more accurate than if you estimate it.
Yep.
And with that number that you get at the end, so it might be somebody's resting metabolic rate, say, for example, 2,000 calories a day. We can then use the heart rate monitors. We can use maybe an Apple Watch, which might be a little bit less accurate. But if a heart rate monitor is not available or an active heart or something like that, to really accurately know how many calories an athlete is burning per day. Now, if you estimate resting metabolic rate, I've seen it quite a few times where this estimation is either way higher or way lower than what we actually measure.
Mm-hmm.
So in one instance, an athlete came to the lab and it was a boxer, and their resting metabolic rate was about 1,000 predicted, if we were to use an equation, 1,750 calories a day.
Yeah.
which we'd then build on top of that an activity factor. Now, when we measured it, it was actually 1,300 calories a day.
Wow.
450 calories lower than what we would have estimated if we'd have just guessed.
Wow.
And if you extrapolate that over a week and then a month and then over a whole camp, that's going to have massive implications for making weight for the sake of a 30-minute test.
Yep.
Usually we'll do that test about twice during camp because the metabolism will change over camp. So we'll kind of do a retest, a recheck at the midpoint so we can, you know, change the calorie targets depending on the kind of different types of day, whether it's a rest day, single training day, double training day.
Yeah.
And then it also informs us, that test also tells us about how well an athlete burns carbohydrates and fats during exercise too. And that has big implications for weight making. So it's not uncommon for some boxers to be quite reliant on carbohydrate at rest as a fuel source.
Yeah.
Which isn't good because it means that the body isn't tapping into its fat stores at rest. So if that's identified, then we can look to manipulate the nutrition so they basically become more efficient individuals throughout the day, and they can burn more fat throughout the day as well, which then helps with the weight making too. And they can save the carbohydrates for when they're training.
Wow. I mean, you know, I'll say this. I know you work with a university in West, you know, West Midlands. It's Wolverhampton, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. So we use Wolverhampton and Porsche at Silverstone.
Yeah. Mega. Absolutely mega. The big thing for me here is, you know, in our field, you know, maybe I'm speaking for both of us here, but I think everybody thinks an expert, you know, and I certainly know I'm not an expert in what I do, and I'm learning every day. But the big thing here for me is, and the big message I get from that is that there's no guesswork.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's, I mean, you can guess, but, and you know, chances are if you do guess, you probably will end up making weight.
Yeah.
But you're not going to make it as well as you could do. And it's not only, this isn't only important for one fight.
Yeah.
But it's important for an athlete's career. If they want to progress with their career as best as possible and they want longevity with their career, then it would be important for them to, you know, find somebody who can run these tests because it will help massively over a camp, but also over, you know, progressive camps thereafter as well. So that's one of the tests. The next one would be an advanced sweat test. So this is something that we run at Porsche at Silverstone at their human performance lab. And this has probably been one of the tests that I've had the most positive feedback on. So actually, again, it's a really simple test to do. The athlete will simply sit there, stick their forearm out, and we'll put two essentially sticky patches on their forearms, and there'll be electrodes that magnetically draw out sweat, so you artificially make the skin sweat. And in those patches, it will collect a certain volume of sweat.
Yeah.
And it will measure the amount of sodium, so the amount of salt that's in that sweat. So obviously, when an athlete uses electrolytes during training, those electrolytes, standard ones off the shelf, contain about 500 milligrams of sodium.
Yeah.
Whereas the sweat test will identify what your unique sweat sodium concentration is. And if your sweat sodium concentration is more than 500, I've seen it up to 1500.
Yeah.
And I've seen it as low as 250. So if your sweat sodium concentration is more or less, then it's no good having the standard electrolyte. You need to have a bespoke electrolyte that matches your sweat sodium concentration. And I liken it to, say, for example, going into a shoe shop and there only being size 7 available. You know,
brilliant.
You might squeeze into it, but it's not going to be comfortable.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
So that's brilliant. And what that does is that means that when the lads are training, they're taking on board the right amount of fluid, because we'll get them to weigh themselves before and after and try and be no less than 2-3% body mass loss during training. But also we're getting the right type of fluid into them as well, so we're replenishing the electrolytes well. Yeah. And this is also really advantageous before a fight, because obviously in the corner, in most circumstances, the boxers, they can only have water. So like an athlete will carbohydrate load before, you know, after the weigh-in, before the fight, mm-hmm. to increase their fuel stores, you can also electrolyte load as well. So you can put in a good lot of electrolytes, not too much. It can be bespoke to what's required. But essentially, you can then you then have a larger reservoir of electrolytes to tap into when your body starts to lose that sweat. So again, it's just another little advantage that you can get before stepping foot in the ring.
I mean, I love it. I'm going to re-listen back and take my notes. You know, and
giving away all my trade secrets now, aren't I?
Absolutely. I'm sure there's many. I'm sure there's many, many more in there. But you know, I like the word investment, and you know, you'll get people who listen and they'll be like, well, you know, I'm not an elite athlete. I said, well, invest in your health then. Invest in your health. And what price do you put on your health?
Yeah.
I'm not an elite athlete. I said, but you're under high stress at work and things such as, you know, B vitamins for cognitive function or, you know, sodium imbalances, etc. That will affect energy levels and decision making and so forth like that. And then you'll get young athletes who'll say, well, you know, I can't afford it. And again, I'll come back to this word. Investment. And I know athletes who again financially weren't amazing at the start of their career. I won't name them, but you know, the people that we know, and now they are reaping the rewards at the elite end of sport because they invested and they had a vision of where they wanted to go. You know, and I often say in terms of S&C kind of work, I say, you know, invest in your S&C or invest in a physio. You know, it's one way or another, there's got to be what's the sort of you know, for every action is a reaction, cause and effect, call it what you want. But I mean, you know, the testing I think is phenomenal. I did know that you'd said that you do some private work there, you know, and if there's people out there, I would highly advise they get in touch with you because I've seen it. I've seen the reports that you do and you know, the detail is phenomenal. And for an elite, you know, for an athlete or an aspiring elite athlete, why would you not, you know?
Yeah, I think you've got to almost try it to believe it and see the impact.
Yep.
I think sometimes athletes can be a little bit skeptical about trying out new things, which, to be honest, is completely understandable. They have their own ways, their own methods. But with the testing, it can only be helpful. And there's a couple that I haven't touched upon yet. I'll talk through them quickly. But the other test is a full bloods panel. So we'll always do a full bloods panel once minimum during a camp, but ideally 2 to 3 times. So for that, we use a company called Nationwide Pathology.
Yep.
Who are based in, well, South Birmingham, Northamptonshire, and they're brilliant. And we'll essentially check for a full spectrum of vitamins and minerals, so your vitamin D, B12, B9, magnesium, folate, testosterone, omega-6-to-3 ratio, pretty much everything we can test that is relevant for performance.
Yeah.
And usually, for most athletes, there'll be two to three, maybe four areas that are suboptimal. So again, another window of opportunity to get those figures, get those markers into the optimal range. So if it's, you know, B12 may be important for energy metabolism, omega-6-to-3 ratio, if that's a little bit out, bring it back into range. We know that's super important for recovery. Vitamin D, there's so much evidence now saying it's so important for bone health. Minimizing the risk of injury, immunity as well. And also there's new emerging data showing it's important for muscle function. But we know that the majority of athletes, particularly here in the UK, are vitamin D deficient, particularly over the winter months. It's only really in the summertime when, you know, probably most people would be, you know, okay with it. But it's important. Again, it's important to test. We can't just guess. We can't just give a multivitamin and think, okay, we're covered, because actually sometimes you can have too much of a good thing. And if, for example, someone's putting in loads of vitamin C, what we know is that if you have 1,000 milligrams or more of vitamin C consistently over a few days or weeks, that can actually blunt adaptations to training.
Yeah.
It blunts the stress response to training. And when you train, obviously, as you know, you want to induce some stress. So there's a rebound effect where the muscle or whatever tissue it is adapts. And the vitamin C, if you have too much, it blunts that adaptation. So you don't get as much bang for your buck from the session.
I saw the, I think you tagged a paper on Instagram about that. Yeah, I read it. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. So again, just all these little things that really add up over the course of a camp, and over the course of a few camps too.
Yeah. You've spoken to me about inflammation as well in the past, and the need for inflammation, and an ongoing thought is that, you know, we're trying to eradicate it completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, and that's not the case.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, obviously things like Cherry Active, you know, obviously very high in antioxidants, has been used quite consistently across many kind of different sports over the years. But there's more emerging evidence now to show that, in fact, we know that if you have too many antioxidants, it will blunt the training response.
Yep.
But also, there's some research showing now that it might also have no impact whatsoever on recovery. So it's just something to be aware of. And maybe we would look to bring something like that in at a particular stage of camp.
Yeah.
But probably not at the start of camp, when training stress, you know, the athlete's been out of camp for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting back into the swing of training. We want their adaptations to be high.
Yep.
We probably wouldn't look to incorporate that unless recovery was really poor and all of the other bases were covered. Maybe during the last phases of camp, we might do just to facilitate that recovery. And then, of course, there's the placebo effect as well, which is super important too. And, you know, if an athlete's taking this cherry juice and they've been doing it for years, and then all of a sudden I come in and take it away, it might have a slight positive physiological impact, but psychologically that could have a huge impact.
Absolutely.
There's all these different things to consider when making one simple recommendation. But that, again, that's going back to the testing. That's where the testing can be really helpful, because it can help to, it's objective data to help inform an athlete of what's best practice and why it's best practice too.
Sure. And this is what you mean when you also talked about nutrition in terms of performance rather than just to make weight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's about, you know, a lot of the time, particularly in boxing, there's two things that I see quite a lot of. And one is fear of carbohydrates through fear of body fat gain, which
you'll
probably want to get into at some point.
Yeah, please do, go for it.
But what we actually, you know, what we know is that the kind of master regulator of fat loss really is an energy deficit. So if you burn more calories than you take in, on the, you know, 99.9% of the time, you will lose weight.
Yeah.
So carbs aren't necessarily to be feared, but it's about being sensible with carbohydrates and periodizing them according to, you know, training load and training output, really. And also what's the purpose of the session? And this is something that I work a lot on with the footballers, with the boxers, pretty much all athletes, is intaking carbohydrates at the right times, because the carbohydrates are so important for immunity in particular. So if you chronically train low carb, you're gonna get the sniffles at some point,
and
you're gonna increase your risk of injury and illness. But also, they're so important for those repeated high intensity efforts. And I see it a lot in boxing, where you see guys in the ring and it'll be round 7, round 8, round 9, round 10, and, you know, the power's gone down, the reaction time's gone down, the ability to perform repeated high intensity efforts has gone down. And I genuinely think it's because they haven't trained their body to use carbohydrates and they've restricted too much.
Mm-hmm.
That's not saying overdo it with carbs and train with carbs every session.
Yeah.
Because if you train low carb certain sessions, you prime your fat energy system, which is important for the slower, steady state stuff, maybe floating in and around the ring. But when it comes to the high intensity efforts, every boxer, well, the majority of boxers, will carb load after weighing, and they'll have great fun doing so. But if they haven't taught their body how to digest and absorb, load the carbs into the muscle, and for that muscle to be effectively use that carbohydrate, then they're not going to be as good as they could be on fight night, really, and also in training. So, yeah, with the boxers specifically, we'll do certain sessions low carb, certain sessions high carb, and certain sessions moderate carb. And that's where it requires quite a detailed, almost pinpoint approach with things. And you know, you'll have seen it with Scott Quigg's plan. Yep. Every single meal, every single drink, everything is completely mapped out, and that's not me just saying here have this. That's based on their preferences, what they enjoy, yep, what they can tolerate, what they can't. So they have obviously that there's some flexibility with stuff, and they can choose what they like. But they're fueling their sessions. Every single session is fueled as it should be, so they get the most adaptation and bang for their buck from the calories, mm-hmm, which is really important, because if they're restricting calories during camp, we need to make sure that every calorie they get is useful.
The right calorie, and doing the right job.
Yeah.
I mean, and timing, you know, I took from that time, of course, timing. I love the point on fear, and that fear is heightened. And you see, I think you see this even in, you know, normal everyday clients, because like you say, they're surrounded by, oh, carbs are the devil, and carbs are evil, carbs make you fat, etc., etc. Their bodies, they're not used to it through deprivation. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I've certainly noticed. They'll then try and take some carbohydrate and have an adverse reaction to it, and then they're like, see, carbs are the devil, the message is from yourself, they are absolutely not the devil. They have to be introduced in the right time, in the right way. Use the word map, and hence the name of this program. Because I believe I've seen, like you say, with what you do with Scott Quigg, that it's completely mapped out, excuse me. And everything serves a purpose. I love it. I'm going to have to move us on. I could listen to you all day. This is mega.
Not many people say that, Rick.
Mate, yeah. No, it's all good. Was there one more test, briefly?
The final one is just body composition testing. So usually we'll...
This is where it's getting good. Sorry, come on. Go for it.
Yeah, so body comp testing. So we'll usually use... DEXA scanner, yep, at the start of camp and maybe midway through camp as well. So that's dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, if I said that right.
Brilliant. I'm glad you did.
That's the gold standard method of assessing body comp. And what that tells us is exactly how much body fat the individual has, how much lean mass they have, and also how dense and strong essentially their bones are.
Yeah.
And this is so important to do at the start of a camp. And in particular, if an athlete's thinking, should I be light heavyweight? Could I make super middleweight? Mm-hmm. Do I need to go up to heavyweight? Whatever. This test is the most invaluable test that a fighter will ever do. Because I've seen it time and time again where a boxer might struggle to make weight. And, you know, they've got 12 kilos to lose, but they only carry 6 kilos of body fat.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I wouldn't want someone to get below 5% body fat,
mm-hmm,
because, or 4% maybe, because when you go that low, your body then, it becomes harder for the body to extract that energy.
Yeah.
So the energy levels will be super low, and you put yourself at an increased risk of illness, injury, etc.
Lack of performance.
Yeah, exactly. And the DEXA scan also tells us about bone mineral density. Mm-hmm. So if an athlete's prone to maybe fractures, the test might show us low bone mineral density. And there's certain things we can do with the nutrition there to increase that, so that we know the bones are, you know, when the guy's going through camp, we know the bone strength is increasing. And then ultimately, again, this is all objective data that we can feed back to the athlete, mm-hmm, to show, look, this is everything that we've done this camp. These are your numbers. The numbers don't lie. You've improved on this, 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 and this. Your bones are much stronger now. They're much, much healthier. You're going to be packing more power in your punch as a result. And it just gives that positive reinforcement that can mean so much to an athlete. Absolutely. At a time.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I'll have a chat in the changing room before they go out to fight. You can see they're getting a little bit nervous. Maybe they've gone a bit quiet. And, you know, I'll bring that up. And it just gives that extra bit of confidence too. yeah, so we usually do a DEXA scan once or twice a camp, and then I'll also do skin folds too. So if I go and visit the house or go and visit the training venue, then I'll do skin folds just so that we keep on top, and we then understand what it is they're losing. Because when they, if the athlete steps on the scales,
yeah,
and they only look at their weight, you don't know whether they're losing body fat or they're losing muscle.
Absolutely.
We want to protect the muscle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
I use skin folds a lot. Same. Done thousands of tests. What about fat storage in a certain part of the body for in relation to hormones, Scott? Without naming any names, I don't want to get sued or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't read up on stuff like that, really. Well, I do. That's a lie. I do. I know about it, but it's not really something I think about too much, shall we say.
that's a very good answer. And
politically correct, you could probably
say. Yeah, and people can read into that what they will. with that in mind, then I've got just a couple more. I'm going to chuck a couple more at you then. Raspberry ketones,
yeah.
Fat loss,
load of shit.
Thank you. I was at somewhere, let's say, recently, and they were advising a certain product for fat loss and for cognitive function and whatnot. And then when I looked at the advice, it was basically putting people on 1,000 calories a day, and I was like, yeah, no.
Which again boils down to that energy deficit.
Yeah, no wonder you're losing weight. You know,
yeah.
But
with that, I think, you know, let's never say never.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not saying, I probably shouldn't have said it's a load of shit, but.
But it's a load of shit.
For me, I think the strength of the claims do not line up with the strength of the evidence.
Yeah.
And that's where it annoys me, because people can be missold things and, you know, almost an illusion. And spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And it's not actually got the science to back it up. Now, I'm open. I think, you know, if all of a sudden something comes to fruition that's in vogue and it's got good research behind it, you know, great. If the context is right, we can look to implement. But with things like that, it does get to me sometimes when I see all these claims, particularly celebrity endorsements and things like that, and they're just scamming people.
Yeah.
They're spending their money and it's not sustainable over the long term. And then before you know it, the client's back to square one of, I've done that for a bit, it worked, but I couldn't sustain it, or it didn't work, even though I was told it would. What do I do now?
Yeah. Mate, I'm not going to put you on the spot anymore. I think that would be unfair. And no way.
I don't mind if you want to shoot up on my way.
It's all good. I think you've answered it there. I think what I think, you know, it's a really good answer, that people need to make an informed choice based on expert advice that's backed by research. I think that's the key, rather than, you know, some girl or guy getting their abs or their ass out on Instagram and you know, I was going to start going down the routes of like skinny coffee and shit like that, you know what I mean? Well,
yeah, we all know it's all hype. Yeah.
But, you know.
The way I look at it, right, is things like fat burners, skinny coffee, et cetera, et cetera. If there was one that worked, there wouldn't be an obese society.
Yep.
So that surely just says it all.
Yep.
Everyone would be, you know, a good way. There'd be no obesity crisis or anything like that.
Yeah.
But at the moment, unfortunately, there's nothing like that will help. But it comes down to sensible eating and ultimately, you know, seeking a qualified person's advice as opposed to someone who looks good themselves and, you know, has a product to sell, maybe.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we are getting fatter. You know, the easy road, what's that saying, the path of least resistance, you know, it is tough, isn't it, to be disciplined and to make the right choices. And I'm sure, you know, the athletes and let's say the clients as well, so we broaden the answer, the guys and girls that you work with that achieve the best results have got discipline as well when it comes down to it?
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're exactly right that it's definitely getting harder for people to stay on the straight and narrow with eating well. Not only are the healthier foods becoming more expensive, but also the kind of junk food is pushed right in our face as we go through a supermarket.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually walking past Tesco's the other day, and there was there's a lady there with a bucket collecting for Diabetes UK, I think it was, on behalf of Tesco, which obviously is great.
Yep.
And then I walked straight into the shop, and the first thing in front of me is Minstrels, Revels, and Milky Bar Buttons, all for a pound. And then underneath that, Kettle Crisps, underneath that, Pringles, and underneath that, Pepsi. And I took a picture of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's just wrong. It is just wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like a client will need obviously some discipline, but it's important, I think, that they look at the end goal. They look at, you know, what are the benefits of eating better. And the way in which I kind of design the plans for the business individuals, the corporate clients, etc., is one that's sustainable over the long term. So I essentially coach them into the right habits, and I give them a wide variety of options of, you know, how to build all of their meals based on their preferences. They have a large volume of food so that they're not hungry. They have on-the-go portable snacks that they can prepare for, really just to try and help them get into the right habits and make it as easy as possible, because it doesn't need to be that difficult.
Yep.
It really doesn't. It just requires some preparation, some, you know, dedication and persistence, a willingness to learn, really.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I like clients to enjoy their food too, so I just try and make it as enjoyable as possible for them.
Love it. Love it. Last couple of things. You've written some publications. And you've co-authored some publications based on, I think I saw a couple on fat oxidation and so forth like that. I think Men was one of them and whatnot.
Yep.
For the guys and girls that want to geek out a bit, where can they find them?
So they're all available on the website. So if you go to scottrobinsonnutrition.com, there's a publications tab, and there should be like a sliding reel of them. And then you can just click on and it will take you to them. So there's a few on fat oxidation during exercise. There's a couple of case studies on Premier League footballers, and also one on bodybuilding contest prep as well that I did a few years ago. So a few to take a look at if you're interested.
Amazing. Last one, advice for young practitioners, coaches who want to follow your path.
Good question. Seek out the right education, I think, would be key. It's important that you do your research. There's a lot of nutrition courses out there that are good, that are really good, and others that maybe don't have as much credibility behind them. So it'd be important to do your research. And like with anything, it's an investment. There's usually, you know, a cost involved. So make sure you're spending your money wisely. I should say on that, actually, I'm also part of the Guru Performance Diploma in Performance Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last, what would it be, 6 or 7 years now, we've run this postgraduate level course, which is essentially designed to help develop elite sport nutrition practitioners. So on the course, we have a range of professionals, so lecturers right through to applied practitioners who speak. And then the students can learn from those guys, and it's all an online course. So if anybody's interested, go to guruperformance.com and you can check that out.
Yeah.
We've got practitioners from the likes of a lot of NBA teams in the States, Chelsea Football Club, et cetera. And what's great about the course is it allows the students to network as well, which is going to be my next point, is don't just go and study. Like, for example, with me during the PhD, I had to kind of think a bit outside the box and think, okay, well, what's after the PhD? And I thought, okay, I need to get myself in the trenches, get myself doing some applied work. And that's ultimately what helped to grow my name, grow my brand, get me the right connections, develop my network. Because at the end of the day, a lot of it's about the network. So that would be really important too. And just, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy, but, you know, for me, I always try and think, how can I be the best version of me, and how can I be the best at what I do, and how can I keep myself ahead of the curve, so to speak, so that the athletes I work with, they're also ahead of the curve. So yeah, just strive hard to do a really good job, exceed expectation where you can. And you know, essentially you should create your own good luck and have a really good career.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Where can people contact you, mate? You've mentioned a website, but social media, etc.
Yes, there's the website, social media. I'm on Twitter, and it's at ScottRobinson8, and then Instagram, it's Scott_Robinson8. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Scott, thank you so much for your time. It's been, you know, extremely valuable to myself, and I'm sure it will be to everyone when they tune in and listen. Thank you so much for being so open, for sharing such in-depth knowledge with us. And what I would say to people is, you know, if Scott's giving this kind of stuff away for free, imagine what working with him would be like. I have the pleasure. It's phenomenal. And I would urge you to get in touch. Scott, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for being a guest with us today.
Thanks, Rick. I really appreciate the kind words. I'm a big fan of the podcast, so it's great to be on. Keep up the good work.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Rick.
Hey, yo, we came to rock the venue. Then the swallow several shots. A Jaeger followed by 20...